This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully, everybody's been doing well. I just got back from a trip. I was in New York working on a client property. I'm happy to be back home and actually working on reports today. I am going to try to get these reports banged out before my habitat day. I'm so behind. It takes me so long to these reports, but hopefully the clients appreciate the level of detail that I work out. So there's going to be some changes coming forth with my business. I'm actually kind of reshape some of the things that I'm going to be working on, how I'm going to approach some of the client designs and stuff that I'm doing. There's going to be kind of levels. I'm starting to work through this now, levels of client experience. And for those that really want that premier support, you know, that high-end support, that engagement, that's going to be a smaller percentage of my portfolio work. But that's what I'm actually going to focus in on. So clients that want work that is more engaging, meaning high level, very intimate, high quality, that's going to be the direction of a lot of the work that I'm doing. I'm also working on a potential community around Whitetail Landscapes. So those that have been clients in the past and those that want to be clients, you'll be able to engage with me a little bit different. I'm going to work through that this year. Basically, it's a different way to operate. And so I'm kind of changing some things with my business, and there'll be some likely training and education tied to that as well. More than likely a once a month training for those that want to really level up. I think what's lacking in the industry is good, cohesive information that is educational and not just selling products. So I just wanted to kind of give you some snippets into where I think I'm going, or at least the plan is at this point. But as always, things change. And of course, just stay in touch with me. Those that, you know, I'll try to put some stuff out in socials and stuff like that. So follow me on social media. Instagram usually is kind of where I mostly am at. But that's the easiest way to kind of know what I'm doing, what I'm up to, et cetera. But my model's changing a little bit. And I said before, I am reducing the amount of podcasts I'm going to be doing going forward. I'm putting together a pretty cool podcast coming up. And so I'll probably start going from every week to every other week, sometime in September, you know, throughout hunting season. And I don't think that's going to change. I'll probably keep it at that level just because, you know, it's not that I'm burnt out. It's that I have a lot of other things that I need to prioritize. And I hope you understand this. I've been doing this podcast pro bono for over 5 years now. And I think hopefully everyone realizes that the part of the podcast was to connect with people and learn. But also, time is of the essence for me, and I want to make sure that I'm being fair to myself. So hopefully you all understand and appreciate that. All right, well, it's been a bit. Brad Harper's back. Geez, I don't know when the last time I've had Brad on here. We're going to catch up with him, see how he's been, what he's up to. I'll try to ask him some tough questions so he can educate us, particularly some around the foliar. So let's get Brad on the line. Hey, Brad, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good, man. I got to tell you a little bit, quick, funny story. So last night I was over on my land. I got back from a job, and of course I just got to work another 3 hours because, you know, what else are you going to do? And I was putting off a client report, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go over there. And man, I'm screwing on with wasps around my box blinds, and oh, what a freaking headache. What blocks, box blinds manufacturer should seal every hole. There should be no opportunity for wasps. And this one wasp, he's like, two or three times larger than any other wasp, and I cannot kill this damn thing. So I fought with him for about an hour. Then I'm like, all right, the hell with it. I'm going back and getting the spray. And I usually don't like killing them. I'll just leave them alone. I'll go back at night, and I'm just like, no, I got to get this crap done. I hit him with a little bit of spray, and he took off wounded, but I think he's still alive, and he's out there. So tonight I might go back and battle with him a little again. So that was my evening. What's going on?
No, I know it. It's wild that somehow, some way, stuff finds its way inside those blinds. It's amazing. Oh,
totally, totally. What's been going on with you? It's been a while for us. Let's catch up with you.
Yeah, so it's been quite the long road, but we finally just finished up about a week ago. Honestly, we made a switch from a company we were with before to a new company, as far as our fertilizers go and kind of who we're partnering with. So it's been a long road of trialing, and you know, like we thought we had some products done, and then back to the drawing board because they didn't sit well in the jug together, and just one thing after another. But it's been about 2.5 years in the making now, to where, like I said, last week we finally just wrapped up, everything is done, and now we can finally get back to normal, if you will, of kind of answering more questions and getting on more podcasts and hopefully doing what I can to get information out there. So that's about all that we know. It's just been a long road of formulation and testing and go back, do it all over again.
So if somebody's trying to find your business, what's the best way to now locate your products that you have out there?
It's still on our same, our website has not changed. That's still harpergs.com. And then we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok. My office phone number is still kind of pasted everywhere. Our email's on there. There's a ton of ways to look us up. Best way is through the website and the submission forms there. That definitely gets the most attention. But I know my phone number's on there as well. So any way of those, we'll get connected and I'll answer any questions I can.
Well, I got a question for you. So sure. I'm going to go back kind of like through my lineage of thinking through this. Now, I don't really have high bioactive soil. You know, I'm in the Northeast. Everything's pretty fragile, depleted. You know, we acid rain through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, right? And recently, my focus has been, or over time, really kind of like on that biological nitrogen. Nitrogen being produced either by microbes in the soil or based on the legumes, the plants that are active in there. And that's all contingent on trying to build kind of this good, you know, soil construct. That being said, a lot of people use nitrogen, and nitrogen creates a lot of, it takes a lot for a plant to process nitrogen in some capacity. What do you recommend for clients to think that they need nitrogen, and what instances are you even applying nitrogen on the crops or certain crops that you're using, just at a high level?
Yeah, so I would say to answer that's going to be like three or four answers. So we'll start with number one. With that being said, like what you're talking about with biology, I mean, that's a great point that a lot of people miss, is kind of attacking the nitrogen standpoint, but forgetting about the carbon standpoint from that. So when we're talking about microbes and biology, we need carbon and nitrogen for them to, you know, reproduce. So as we're putting down the nitrogen, if we don't have the carbon there, we're not doing them any favors as far as letting them reproduce naturally in their own environment. So that's definitely one key component that gets missed a lot. Now, obviously, if we have thatch and the breakdown of cover crops, that's huge, and you'll get the carbon from that. But that is often overlooked to where it's like, hey, we're trying to build our soils, we're doing this, and yes, we're running cover crops, but do you have enough carbon there? Do you have enough nitrogen with that? That's one thing to kind of keep in mind. It's five parts carbon to one part nitrogen, and that's what they need to reproduce.
So if I pull on that thread a little bit, so carbon in the soil, what is, and you talked about some of the material that's decomposing, but obviously microbes are living and dying in the soil. How does carbon exist in their world? Is it microbes dying? Is it plants exudating sugars? Like, what are the suggestions to increase the carbon, the 5-to-1 ratio that we just chatted about?
The best way and the most usable for that scenario is your organic matter and coming from, let's just say, humus being the most popular, right? So when you have a low organic matter, you know, okay, I need to run more cover crops and get that cycle going, or I need to use, like in our case, that was the reason for a carbon-based fertilizer. That's a way that we can get that in there. But higher organic matter, you're not going to have to worry about it near as much as somebody with a low organic matter soil. So that's going to be the easiest and best way to do that. And the best way to do that is by cover crops.
So let's be very, maybe more specific. I know you deal with a lot of sandy soil, all types of soils. I shouldn't say that, but in that region where you live, the soil tends to be sandy in some areas. That being said, you know, if you have a good, we'll just say organic material or matter percentage, what is that in soil types that seem reasonable? Because in my area, for example, I've told everybody, if you have silty loamy soil or silty gravelly soil, which I have in this local area, there's a not a maximum, but there's limitations in some capacity. Like there probably is a glass ceiling that's going to be hard to at least in my lifetime to exceed. Like to get, you know, 10% organic matter is probably out of touch for me. But I'm around 7.5 right now, which is nobody that I've met here locally farming or other operation, even organic, is above 5%. So, you know, trying to get to a very high level where there is a lot of carbon in the soil, like, are there expectations? Like, is there an expectation like you should be at 3% organic material or, you know, 2%? Give some framework around that in your mind.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good question. So as we look at sandier soils, and I'll say sandier, and then I'll kind of give a CEC reference that will help. But like if you got a sandy soil with a CEC that's less than 4, I would be like, my goal would be getting to 3% and maintaining a 3% organic matter. Like that's going to be good enough, and that's going to get you everything you need. You'll be able to grow just about anything you want. Granted, you might need a little more fertilizer for, you know, certain crops, but that's going to be a really good goal to shoot for. If you're in a more loamy soil and your CEC is maybe between 4 and 7, 4 and 8, then I think you can get to that 4% of organic matter. Mm-hmm. And as you go up, you start getting into the heavier soil and the higher CEC than that, then I'd shoot for 5. Then I'd shoot for 6. You know, at the higher you go up in the CEC and the heavier your soil is, the higher you're able to go. But, you know, once you hit 5, I mean, 5 is just awesome. You can do anything you want, anytime, anywhere. That's good dirt. And for how many samples that I see in a year and how many samples that I see with 5 or more, that's very few and far between. So most of the samples that I get, and that's running, you know, soil samples in just about every state, all the way out to probably Colorado. I don't do a lot on the West Coast, but most guys are around that 2-4% organic matter, and probably the average would be that 4-5-6 CEC range. So as you look as a whole, I would say everybody's kind of right in that mid range on average right now, but that'd be a good, you know, goal to shoot for of, hey, I'm going to keep running an extra cover crop, or I'm going to keep throwing some more rye and keep trying to build that until I can get to one of those numbers, depending on where, what soil type and what CEC you have.
Now, you know, what I know about soil, you know, may be limited, but there is a couple things that I do appreciate. And I know that in some of these low CEC soils that are a bit sandier, you're going to have a hard time holding on to nutrients. And that's, you know, why you mentioned what you mentioned. There are products out there, and maybe we can just talk about this, like carbon-rich products. I'm not gonna name any products right now, but I want you to talk about them. You know, things that you're using that maybe have, you know, very highly active humic and fulvic acids, you know, that may be complex or tie on to some of the nutrients, because I think a lot of times we don't realize, but there's, you know, that each nutrient, the ionic nutrient could be positively or negatively charged. And in that, it needs to be attracted to something, right, to hold on to something. And oftentimes, you know, negative charge ions attract to positive charge ions around plants. And, you know, that's what we're trying to kind of create so they don't leach away in these sandier soils. What are things that you're doing that could support that from a product standpoint? So people say, well, yeah, you have this, I don't know, this carbon foliar spray. What do? Do I drench it? Do I put it on the plant? Like maybe a combination of both? Like what's the purpose behind that? And should you use it really in all soil contexts? You know, high CECs, low CECs, or sandy or clay soils? What's the thought process around that?
Yeah, so I mean, exactly like you said, so every nutrient has a charge. And if we think about that and we think about soil being negatively charged, and that's why you talk about phosphorus is the, you know, the biggest one everyone talks about. You go put a lot of phosphorus down, you're going to see it immediately on your soil sample because it's going to jump way up. Because as soon as you put an unprotected source of phosphorus down, it's going to tie up in your soil and it's going to tie up with calcium most likely. And you'll see that in your sample. It'll come back right away of all of a sudden, hey, you put a bunch of triple 19 out. Next year, your soil sample will show higher in phosphorus because most of that is getting tied up. So as you look at that and looking at different types of or different sources of fertilizer, and we look at, you know, coincide that with CEC and sandier soils or even on clay type soils, my argument would be I don't necessarily need to build up my bank in the soil as a lot of people say, because that takes so long to actually chip away at that and get to use what is there. Like a lot of things have to happen in order to make that work. So rather than try to build that bank up, I would rather try to find something that's readily available and can get right in the plant. And that is why it's such a big deal, especially in sandy soils, that you use a protected nutrient, because now we don't have to worry about what's going on in the soil. We don't have to worry about anything. We're applying it. The plant can automatically take it up without anything happening, and it's in the plant and you're using it. And that's one benefit, like we talked about with foliars. You don't have to worry about anything that's happening in the soil. A foliar application should get right in the plant and go to work. Does that answer all those questions, I guess?
Yeah, I think it does. Now, do you have like a humic or carbon spray that you would recommend that you either offer or suggest people utilize if that's something that, you know, they either want a complex nutrients as they add them in the soil, or are some of the products that you already have complexed, you know, synergized with some of those humics so they're easily absorbed? Is there something there to think through?
Yeah, and that's, I guess this is where we'll take our big sidestep and kind of get off topic a little bit. Yep. And talking about, I guess, what I've been up to and what had happened. So I was with a different company before, and that company is still, I mean, I'm going to say their products are the second best because I spent a lot of time and we made sure ours are better. But that company still has phenomenal products. They're great guys. It was just kind of didn't see eye to eye as far as going forward. So we split ways and I partnered with a new company now. It's called Full Spectrum Products. And what we were shooting to do is looking at so many soil samples every year. We kind of keep seeing the same issues pop up. And what we were trying to accomplish is how can we fit as much as possible into a gallon and be able to check off a ton of these issues guys are having. And carbon was one of them. And the second one was micronutrients. We kept seeing over and over, no matter what, guys even that were applying micronutrients, just constantly low in some of the key ones. So what we set out to do is how can we fit as much carbon, as many nutrients and as many micronutrients into a gallon to ship that all over the place as possible. And obviously still have that be shelf stable and still be able to mix it with different things. And that's what we finally just finished. So when I'm looking at let's just say our fertilizers, All of ours are complexed or chelated, so they're 100% protected. So you can spray them on the soil, and it doesn't matter what's going on in the soil. That is going to sit there, and the plant's readily available to take that up. Like, nothing has to happen or break down. That can automatically just go in the plant. You know, granular, you need the rain, and it has to go through the soil and the microbes. Then the plant can start taking it up. You know, once we get it on there, it's ready to go. So that's huge, in my opinion. And the complex and the chelation is huge, because we don't have to worry about anything. We don't have to worry about putting a gallon down and, you know, 90% of it getting tied up. That's a big deal, in my opinion, that we're able to literally say 100% of our fertilizer is readily available to get taken up, and we don't have to worry about tie-ups. So that's huge. And when we talk about the complexing and the chelation, that's done in our products with carbon. So now not only are we putting carbon down that can be utilized by the microbes, can be utilized for soil, but the plants use so much carbon by themselves that they're able to take that up and think of it like a present. Like, they see carbon, they grab that, all of a sudden they open it up, and the inside is a nutrient, whether that be phosphorus, nitrogen, potassium, whether that be the microbes, they're all complexed and chelated with carbon. So now we're really hammering that home and trying to get as much carbon in the system as possible, while at the same time providing a few extra things that we weren't able to provide previously.
So maybe this is a silly question, but something that I've struggled with, and I'm kind of asking this to get direction from you. So in the Northeast, specifically in New York, throughout most of New York State, and this applies to a lot of different areas. And I've, you know, I look at soil samples from all over the place with my clients, but we have very high iron and aluminum levels in our area. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know that when you have like highly acidic soils, or, you know, relatively acidic soils, that's, you know, below 6.0, around 6.2 in that range, like 6.2 and below, phosphorus binds tightly with some of those metals. And getting iron active in a plant and balance some of the micronutrients, but at the same time you're dealing with all this nutrient tie up, so to speak. You know, phosphorus also bind with calcium. So in my particular area, that's an issue. So I have all these like factors working against my soil function. In those examples, like, what is the step approach to kind of looking at balancing soils? Like, maybe it's at a high level. Like, what can you do to give yourself enough opportunity to kind of mitigate some of these issues that are like historical land use and environmental issues that affect kind of some of these areas where you have high metals and you need more phosphorus in the plants, it's deficient. And maybe you do have a calcium issue, but maybe you don't. And so just maybe some thinking around that topic so people can wrap their heads around, hey, this is important to look at the elements of my soil sample and not just focus on one particular topic like phosphorus as an example.
Correct. And that's a really good question, because that is almost everybody. Like, it honestly comes, I think, from the universities a long time ago of, you know, here's our soil sample, we need to fix this. And I guess the new wave of farming technology is coming on the agriculture side. It's saying, okay, we realize there's an imbalance. We realize there's issues there. But rather than sit there and try to spend our time and money fixing that, if you will, let's not try to focus on fixing the numbers on our sample. Let's feed the plants, feed the biology, and we'll keep in mind the numbers that are on our samples, and that will adjust what products we use and or how much. But if we feed the plant and feed the biology over time, obviously that doesn't happen right away, but what we're seeing is we can make a really good fix in 2 to 3, maybe 4 years, and it'll start to balance itself out.
Okay.
Because if you think about with where you're starting, and think about, okay, maybe it is phosphorus, but as we go to fertilize our new crop, or hey, we're going to go plant this next crop, we got to get our fertilizer out there, we're not really changing too much. You know, a lot of guys, okay, well, maybe I need less triple 19 or more triple 19, or maybe that's 6-24-24. They're not really changing really anything, if you will. We're still putting granular down. It's still unprotected nutrients. It's still salt based. So we're not really fixing much. So as soon as you go and, okay, I'm going to cut out the salt based and I'm going to use something else that's carbon based. Well, automatically your biology is going to thrive because you're not putting a bunch of salt down. Right. So boom, that's a huge step.
Yep.
And maybe your nutrients are protected. So now I don't need to put 300 pounds of triple 19 down. Maybe now I'm putting 5 quarts of this carbon based product down. And then now we're able to slowly start letting our biology eat away, if you will, at our stored phosphorus to start bringing that down. And it just starts like that. And it's like a domino effect of, okay, as soon as we stop putting the salt down, our soil is automatically going to get better. And then now the biology is working. And then you start talking about the chelated nutrients and just working on feeding the plant. And what does that plant need to do what we need it to do? Let's give it that at the same time as we're giving the soil carbon, and then slowly over time, it's going to offset. And when you talk about like high sodium issues or high magnesium issues or having a ton of iron in there, we deal with that a lot on the ag side. And our solution to that is we add carbon and we add a bunch of calcium. And guys will say, okay, well, my calcium's at, you know, 70%. I'm already looking really good on my base saturation calcium. Like, why do you want me to add more? And it's like, yes, I understand that. But the plant needs calcium, and with what we're trying to do needs calcium, because when you add that, that's going to keep continuing to open your soil up, give calcium for the root zone and the plant. And the more carbon and calcium we add, a lot of those are able to technically get flushed, if you will.
Is there a point of diminishing returns on that, that you start to say, okay, and maybe it's a biology thing, maybe you need biology in that equation to help maybe alleviate or process through some of the limitations? And just asking on the calcium side of the house.
Yes, there 100% there is. And what we do is, like, let's say we're shooting for 65% plus on your base saturation calcium. And then we're shooting for, let's just say, 10 to 15 on the magnesium side of base saturations. Once we can, you know, balance out that ratio and balance out maybe our sodium, maybe some of our other nutrients that were high, we're able to flush through. Once we're able to balance those out, all we do on the ag side is we'll reduce our rates. So we don't need to keep throwing 1 or 2 quarts of calcium per acre. Hey, we're balanced. Let's drop that down. All we need is a pint to satisfy this crop's needs to grow a good root system, to keep those ratios in balance, to grow that plant, to make sure that whole plant is sturdy and the cell walls are great. Now we can just reduce those rates, but we don't really want to ever get away from it, because as soon as you get away from it, now it's going to pull everything from your bank, and that's just going to start lowering your numbers. So that's all we look at is, okay, hey, maybe we started out and the recommendation was 48 ounces an acre. We're going to run that for 3 crop cycles and then we'll take another look. Normally when we get that back, okay, hey, we did what we wanted to. We're going to drop that down. You can do 16 to 24 ounces an acre. Let's run that for a couple crop cycles and let's check back in and see where you're at. And that's a really good point of why soil samples are so valuable. You know, you spend 15, 20, 30 bucks on a soil sample, maybe 50 on a really good one, but that just saved you a quart per acre of just calcium. Maybe that saved you, just say 100 pounds of potassium, or in our case, a quart or 2 quarts. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's why those are so valuable, because not only do we want to make sure we put enough out, but it's also the opposite end to where, hey, we don't need to put that much out. That's more money in our pocket. Now we can maybe go plant than 10 fruit trees because we just saved that much money.
I want to go down the road of seed treatment. And I think this is, I know that you have a product on this, but this is along the lines of, and again, just follow me here. I've been a big advocate. I'll just mention what seed I use. I use King's Agro Seed, and I've been using them for the past 3 years. Really good seed products, high germ, you know, just good quality. Right. And, and they're sourcing from wherever they're sourcing as well. Right. Cause there's a distribution tied to all these companies. That being said, thanks for listening to part one. In part two of the podcast, Brad Harper and I get into more details on foliar recommendations, how to increase biology in your soil, some new techniques to handling switchgrass residue, and bad products that are on the market that we're not using. We'll see you next week.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.